Orb, Volume 1, Number 14, Individualism. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. In the last episode on equality, I spoke of our sense of fairness. That sense includes the feeling that people should own the fruits of their labor. If you make something, that thing is yours, unless, of course, you were paid to make it for someone else. Then it's theirs. They bought it before the fact. People have a sense of inherent property rights. This is part of individualism, the philosophy that a person should pursue their own self-interest above all other considerations. Self-sacrifice weakens the human spirit and ultimately destroys value. That sounds rather stark. We live in a multi-hued, multi-shaded world. Certainly one can see that making some sacrifice of personal productivity to a social collective can yield benefits to the individual that result in a net return on the initial investment. What is really at stake are three core ideas: the right of the individual to pursue their own aspirations, the right of the individual to own what they produce, and the responsibility of the individual for their own success or failure. In short, individualism says, "I'm not my brother's keeper, nor is anyone my keeper." Speaking first to aspiration, the desire one has to create or realize some deep personal vision, let's consider the case put by Ayn Rand in The Fountainhead. Essentially, the individual is the fountainhead of creativity that yields the products, the goods and services of our civilization. Quote, "Men have been taught that the highest virtue is not to achieve, but to give. Yet one cannot give that which has not been created. Creation comes before distribution, or there will be nothing to distribute. The need of the creator comes before the need of any possible beneficiary. Men have been taught that it is a virtue to agree with others, but the creator is the man who disagrees. Men have been taught that it is a virtue to swim with the current, but the creator is the man who goes against the current. Men have been taught that it is a virtue to stand together, but the creator is the man who stands alone." Unquote. In any group, there is always the one who first articulates an idea. Others may have held it in their minds, but the one that speaks aloud is the one that is the creative force. They must take the risk that others will criticize or ridicule the idea, and they must either press on alone or engage the support of others to realize the vision.
This ain't a song for the brokenhearted. Silent prayer for the faith departed. I ain't gonna be just a face in the crowd. You're gonna hear my voice, I'll shout it out loud. It's my life, and it's now or never. Ain't gonna live forever. I just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life. My heart's an open highway. Frank said it, I did it my way. Just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life. This is for the ones who stood their ground. Tommy and Gina who never backed down. Tomorrow's getting harder, make no mistake. Luck ain't enough, you gotta make your own breaks. It's my life, and it's now or never. Ain't gonna live forever. Just wanna live while I'm alive.
It's my life. My heart's an open highway. Frank said he did it my way. I want to live while I'm alive. It's my life. Stand tall when they're calling you out. Don't bend, don't break, baby, don't break down. It's my life, and it's now or never. Ain't gonna live forever. I just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life, and it's an open highway. Frank said he did it my way. Just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life, and it's now or never. I ain't gonna live forever. Just wanna live while I'm alive. Just wanna live while I'm alive. I just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life.
Throughout the centuries, there were men who took first steps down new roads, armed with nothing but their own vision. The great creators, the thinkers, the artists, the scientists, the inventors, stood alone against the men of their time. Every new thought was opposed. Every new invention was denounced. But the men of unborrowed vision went ahead. They fought, they suffered, and they paid, but they won. No creator was prompted by a desire to please his brothers. His brothers hated the gift he offered. His truth was his only motive. His work was his only goal. His work, not those who used it. His creation, not the benefits others derived from it. The creation which gave form to his truth. He held his truth above all things and against all men. He went ahead, whether others agreed with him or not, with his integrity as his only banner. He served nothing and no one. He lived for himself. And only by living for himself was he able to achieve the things which are the glory of mankind. Such is the nature of achievement. Man cannot survive except through his mind. He comes on earth unarmed. His brain is his only weapon. But the mind is an attribute of the individual. There is no such thing as a collective brain. The man who thinks must think and act on his own. The reasoning mind cannot work under any form of compulsion. It cannot be subordinated to the needs, opinions, or wishes of others. It is not an object of sacrifice. The Creator requires independence. He neither serves nor rules. He deals with men by free exchange and voluntary choice. I came here to say that I do not recognize anyone's right to 1 minute of my life, nor to any part of my energy, nor to any achievement of mine. No matter who makes the claim, it had to be said. The world is perishing from an orgy of self-sacrificing.
To Rand, self-sacrifice was to suppress one's aspirations and purpose, to submit to the rule of a collective. The character of Rourke was an architect who blew up a building because it was altered from his original vision. That alteration was for him a theft of his idea, a claim of others to take from him without due payment. Did Rourke consider what he was stealing from the craftspeople when he destroyed the labor of their hands? The architect may design the building, but it is the skills of craftspeople, carpenters, plumbers, and electricians that make it manifest. So whose building is it in the end? The stonemasons and millwrights have as much claim to the investment of their labor, or their creative skill, as the original architect. Each needs the other to realize their visions. Quoting Rand again from Rourke's courtroom speech in The Fountainhead, men exchange their work by free mutual consent to mutual advantage when their personal interests agree and they both desire the exchange. If they do not desire it, they are not forced to deal with each other. They seek further. This is the only possible form of relationship between equals. Anything else is a relation of slave to master or victim to executioner. No work is ever done collectively by a majority decision. Every creative job is achieved under the guidance of a single individual thought. An architect requires a great many people to erect his building, but he does not ask them to vote on his design. They work together by free agreement, and each is free in his proper function. An architect uses steel, glass, concrete, produced by others, but the materials remain just so much steel, glass, and concrete until he touches them. What he does with them is his individual product and his individual property. This is the only pattern for proper cooperation among men. Unquote. Really, the artistry of the stonemason and millwright are not their own. Their products are actually the property of the architect that gave them a project to work on. What of the clients that commissioned the architect? What ownership flows to them?
When you are this close to Hoover Dam, it makes you realize how small a human is in relation to this as a human project. You can't be the guy who builds this. You can't be the town who builds this. You can't even be the state who builds this. You have to be the country that builds something like this.
An individual had the vision and needed the nation to engage in realizing it. Where does the ownership in the dam reside? Each needs the other to create the dam. The individualist says the ownership resides with the creator of the idea. The people say the ownership rests with them because they paid to make it real. It must come down to the terms of the contract. Be ruthless. In a study published by the journal Psychology, Crime, and Law, Belinda Board and Katrina Fritzon tested 39 senior managers and chief executives from leading British businesses. They compared the results to the same tests on patients at Broadmoor Special Hospital for those convicted of serious crimes. On certain indicators of psychopathy, the boss's scores either matched or exceeded those of the patients. In fact, on these criteria, they beat even the subset of patients who had been diagnosed with psychopathic personality disorders. The psychopathic traits on which the bosses scored so highly closely resemble the characteristics that companies look for. Those who have these traits often possess great skill in flattering and manipulating powerful people, egocentricity, a strong sense of entitlement, a readiness to exploit others, and a lack of empathy and conscience are also unlikely to damage their prospects in many corporations. Reading their work, it seems that if you have psychopathic tendencies and are born to a poor family, you're likely to go to prison. If you have psychopathic tendencies and are born to a rich family, you're likely to go to business school. This is not to suggest that all executives are psychopaths. It is to suggest that the economy has been rewarding the wrong skills.
It's a hard world to get a break in. All the good things have been taken. But girl, there are ways to make certain things pay. Some dressed in these rags, I'll wear sable someday. Hear what I say. I'm gonna ride the serpent. No more time spent sweating rent. Hear my command, I'm breaking loose. Ain't no use holding me down. Stick around, and baby, remember, it's my life, and I'll do what There'll be women in their fortunes who just want to mother orphans. Are you gonna cry while I'm squeezing them dry, taking all I can get, no regrets? When I openly lie and live on their money, believe me, honey, that money, can you believe? I ain't no saint, no complaints. So go throw out any doubt. And baby,
baby,
remember, it's my life and I'll do what I want. It's my mind and I'll think like I want. Show me I'm wrong, hurt me sometime. Someday I'll treat you real fine.
Broadly speaking, people are not as hard-hearted as the pure individualist. We do make sacrifices for others that, for reasons beyond their control, have fallen on some hard luck, illness, natural disasters, and systemic inequities. The individualist makes a strong distinction around no fault of their own. Owning the responsibility for one's successes and failures is a core element of individualism. There are two starkly different cultures in Japan and the US. The Japanese are broadly more self-sacrificing to the social good, whereas America is built on a foundation of individualism and pursuing one's own interests. The attitudes towards success and failure highlight a very interesting contrast. In Japan, people tend to pass their successes off as if they were more of a reflection of luck than of judgment, while suggesting their failures are more probably attributable to their own lack of ability. Americans are more likely to attribute their personal successes to their own abilities and their failures to external factors. Of course, in America, if someone else is a failure, it is because they made a bad choice to take an addictive drug or enter a bad relationship or trust a business associate that turned out to be a fraud. Caveat emptor. This tendency to not be my brother's keeper translates into a desire to constrain social policy. The individualist must own their own success by virtue of their own ability to create. The profit motive must exist to drive that creation. If the state offers social safety nets, then an individual can serve their own self-interest by leeching from the collective without contributing anything. Why should they produce? This thinking leads to policies of consumer-focused systems of education and healthcare, and welfare reform that minimizes state dependency and empowers individuals. Empowering individuals is code for individual responsibility, with associated penalties. If you fail to succeed, it is no one's fault but your own. Owning your lack of creation means owning the destitution that goes with it. This economic theory is basically carrots and sticks. If your carrots are diminished by taxation on your productivity, you're less likely to be productive. If government social programs remove the sticks for failure to produce, again, you're not motivated to be productive. Yet, as Ayn Rand wrote so passionately, the mind cannot function under duress.
The reasoning mind cannot work under any form of compulsion. It cannot be subordinated to the needs, opinions, or wishes of others. It is not an object of sacrifice.
No one can force you to have an idea. How does starving someone, depriving them of social supports, not look like coercion to create and produce? Is the need for profit not a form of coercion? Individualism looks to me like a strong philosophy for spiritual aspiration, but is weak when translated to economics. Many artists create not for profit, but from spiritual necessity. They rarely expect their art to put food on the table or keep a roof over their heads. They create because it is in them to do it. Creation does not rely on the profit motive. Serving one's self-interest with a psychopathic zeal typically results in some economic losers. As government weakens social services, the expectation is for the successful elite to adopt some self-sacrificing behaviors and be philanthropic enough to provide the services that government is not. As discussed in the episode on charity, this is usually not so rightly charitable, as it still serves the self-interest through improving one's public image to enhance one's market and ultimate profits. As Elizabeth Warren states, the fruits of one's labor did not come through individual effort alone. There is a debt owed to the society that enabled the success to occur.
There is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. Nobody. You built a factory out there, good for you, but I want to be clear. You moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for. Yep. You hired workers the rest of us paid to educate. You were safe in your factory because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us paid for. You didn't have to worry that marauding bands would come and seize everything at your factory and hire someone to protect against this because of the work the rest of us did. Now look, you built a factory and it turned into something terrific or a great idea. God bless. Keep a big hunk of it. But part of the underlying social contract is you take a hunk of that and pay forward for the next kid who comes along.
We are not the cat that walks alone. Neither are we the ant that sacrifices its very life for the colony. We are somewhere in between. Individualism looks good in the intellectual space, the realm of reason, but translates poorly to the real world, where people are also emotional beings, with a capacity for compassion and self-sacrifice. We recognize things like joy and love, and give them value in our lives. As the Beatles sang, "Money can't buy me love." Selfishness has a place. When you have a creative idea, you need to own it, to champion it, to manifest it. You deserve your share of credit for it. But as your idea contributes to your society, don't forget the capacity of the society you live in to create the environment in which your idea can be realized. What really inspires creation? We're not likely to ever know. Yet, when there is a big idea put on the table, it can inspire more than just individual action. The right idea can stir a collective spirit that can transform a people into a citizenry and turn a territory into a nation. Is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.